very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again when I am turn.
Your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
He's one
but girls.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am the king.
I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffria Podcast. My name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And with me as always.
Well, not always.
Almost always. With me as much as the Stark kids are reunited. It's Catfish. Catfish, how you doing?
Oh, I am so glad to be back, Bubba. I am.
You were in Hawaii, and you're glad to be back to watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah, well, I was in Hawaii. I made sure to watch Game of Thrones last week, but I was not able to join you on the podcast. I know last week you gave last week's episode a 10.
I did give
it. I gave it a 9.5, and I'm glad I had room to grow. I'm speechless. I'm so excited. I think the last time I was this excited after the end of an episode and just jacked was the Battle of the Bastards. That's how.
And we saw that in a big crowd with
yes,
people cheering.
Yes. Oh, my
so,
goodness.
So, okay, I guess there isn't much room to guess. But, Catfish, what are you going to give this? The fourth episode of Season 7 entitled The Spoils of War.
I'm going to give it 10.
10?
What I like to call double Fs.
Double Fs?
Yes. It's a phrase I use frequently, flambéed fighters.
Oh, no. Man. That's cooking real good.
Yeah, they were looking good, and they were cooking good.
If Dickon was complaining about the smell in Highgard, what do you think all this barbecue smells like?
Ah, wow! They might have set a record for number of people on fire in maybe even a movie, for God's sakes. So, Bubba,
yeah,
I gave it a 10. I went as high as humanly possible. You gave last week's episode a 10.
I did.
This one, there was a lot of excitement last week, but this one was almost completely different. It was a lot of based on the action. Had a very different feel. What did you give this week's episode, Bubba?
Well, you gave it 10 out of 10.
I did.
Our good friend, Double M. Matt Murdock.
Yes.
Who really is the father of the Joffria podcast. We spun off of his great podcast, Winterfell.
We are the Jon Snows.
Right. Right. Because we're bastards of Double M Matt Murdock, who's at Musical Conceptions on Twitter. Matt tweeted out, Game of Thrones, best period, effing period, episode period ever, exclamation point. He wrote, and now I have to try and sleep, exclamation point. That will be tough. 3 exclamation points.
Oh, my goodness.
Let me say that this is going to seem ridiculous.
Yes.
But I'm going to only, note the word only, give this episode 9, what I like to call triple Ds out of 10.
Triple Ds?
Well, triple D, a lot of times it comes out during the Olympics.
Uh-huh.
Summer Olympics, excuse me. Mainly because that's what I like to call, and what Olympic people like to call, a Dickon deep dive.
A Dickon deep dive.
Dickon did a deep dive to save Sir Jaime, or kill Sir Jaime, as they sink to the bottom of that lake there. Man, oh man, this episode left me on a high.
Ooh.
I can't think of action scenes I've loved more in Game of Thrones.
Oh.
You know, with Hardhome, the Battle of the Bastards. I'm one of the people who doesn't underrate the Watchers on the Wall episode. So this episode ended on a high.
I mean, and you had two people that you wanted everyone to live, but you knew somebody was going to get took. And right. It was like, these are all people that are really important to us. What's going to happen here?
Amen. The only reason why I can dare to go down to 9 is that my own expectations about a Stark family reunion. I almost think, remember how much time they gave to, Jon Snow is meeting Daenerys Targaryen last week. That first scene, they gave that a good chunk of time. And in this Stark reunion, which I have waited for, I think so many viewers have waited for so long, I think they gave it an okay amount of time, but I think it needed as much as it had last week's Jon Snow and Daenerys meeting. I think this reunion needed as much time. I am fascinated that it has such an interesting pull because they have all changed and suffered, these three Stark kids, so much.
Absolutely.
And so that is powerful. But I almost needed more talking. In an episode with such great action, and even Arya and Brienne had a great action scene. I thought, I love that scene.
They did.
I needed something else. So this is on me. It's not on the show.
Okay.
It was a great episode of television.
I can see that. I think the only difference is last week, these were two major characters who had different agendas who we know are going to clash.
Right.
And so that needed more time. And here we have the history of it. And just, I thought it was very poetic. It was so stark, pardon the pun. It was so stark.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, stark.
All the changes that have happened and the expectations they have for them, even though there was that great line about Sansa said, you know, it was a little difficult for me. And Arya's like, yeah, no, well, not all tea and crumpets for me either.
Yeah, so we're going to dive into this episode real quick. We're going to give away two of our fabulous prizes. But Catfish, before we even do that.
Yeah, tell me.
I think we have maybe buried the lead, a bit like Uncle Jamie. Is Sir Jamie Lannister dead? Yes or no? Let's hear it.
Wow. I have to say no, because I think we would see it more than he's not just going to, like, you know, they're going to drag him out of the lake. I can't see somebody major like that not actually seeing him get it in the gut like most people do in this show. You know, blown up is one thing.
Right.
Like what happened to the Sept. But to just him go down into the murky depths, although that stuff is heavy.
Oh, yeah. That armor. His hand is weighing him down, for God's sakes.
You're right about that. Maybe that's the only way you can kind of ding the end, because I thought tonight's episode, because it was, as I said earlier, like, somebody's going to have to go. So if Jamie doesn't really go, it didn't have as high stakes as I thought.
What about Dickon? Dickon's a deep dive. He ain't getting out of that.
Dickon, you know what? But you know what? Who's a survivor? Bronn.
I was going to say Hot Pie. Oh, yeah. Bronn had some miracle escapes.
Yeah.
Let me say that about Sir Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess it hasn't hit me so much because I can't believe this would be Jamie's death. I'm beginning to think that maybe this is one of those George R. R. Martin fake-out deaths, which actually happened in some of the later books. And I guess some people would actually go back and maybe it happened in the third book where there's an Arya chapter at the Red Wedding where she's knocked out by the Hound and you think, oh no, is Arya dead? But then you found out later she was just knocked out. But if this is the end of Sir Jaime, and I don't feel it as strongly as I feel I should,
I might
rank this episode down one more point. But so much good stuff to get to.
Well, remember, power. We don't know where Melisandre is. She could be ready.
All right.
Let's bring back everybody.
Well, you're saying that. I'm thinking about, for every book reader and TV fan who's read about the infamous prince that who's promised, you know, you do kind of have to be brought back to life. You are reborn amongst, you know, salt and smoke. And maybe that's a saltwater lake Jamie fell into if he could be pulled out of this and he could be resurrected. Holy smoke, so much to get to. Fans, we're going to break it down hardcore. But because you guys, who I like to call double L's.
Double L's?
Well, in Hawaii, I'm not sure what it refers to.
Lovely, you know, like, luau.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Okay.
But here on the podcast, it refers to the people who, the only reason why we do this podcast, you guys are loyal listeners.
Oh, wow. I can't believe, you know, it's only been a week and I forgot that already.
So for you guys who are out there kind enough to download it and enter our contest,
right,
we're put all your entries into the bowl. We're going to draw two prizes right now. For anybody new, this is such a great episode. I'm sure we're going to have more downloads than usual.
Ooh.
You're like, how can I get into this great contest where the Joffrey podcast is giving away at least one prize for every episode of Game of Thrones season 7, and we're capping it off on the 7th episode by giving away George R. R. Martin's autographed copy of A Game of Thrones.
Woo.
And maybe another autographed George R. R. Martin book. We'll get to that in a bit. If you want to be entered into this contest, you're kind enough to download it, so we want you to be entered and win. There are a couple ways you can get entered and have multiple entries. First way is when Catfish and I, on our Twitter handles, when we tweet out a link to the latest Joffrey podcast, you just retweet that.
Just retweet it. It's
retweet
simple.
Retweet it.
You press one button.
You retweet it, you get one entry into the contest. If you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/doublepodcast, that's the word double, the single letter P, the word podcasts, plural, facebook.com/doublepodcast. When we post a notice about a new The Joffrey Podcast there, and you share that, that can be a second entry. And if you like the Facebook page, that can be a third entry.
You know what the bonus to liking the page is you get little notifications when stuff is out. Because the Double P Podcast Network has a far reach, and it is covering multiple podcasts at the moment, and we've got more new podcasts coming up later on in the year. At the moment, the network is doing three podcasts for shows that were all nice enough to occur on this very same evening.
I know, it's killing us. It's slowly killing us. But do it today. We're going to be giving away two. That's right, two.
Two.
Two Game of Thrones Steins. And with each Stein, you also get a poster. This is exclusive poster from the Game of Thrones live concert experience.
Wow.
Poster with the music, like the notes, the clef notes, the treble notes, written out to the Game of Thrones scene. Each poster signed by Game of Thrones composer Ramin Djawadi. We're giving away two to loyal listeners. Now, what's so funny is
I can't believe this.
I tweet about new episodes of the Joffrey Podcast multiple times. So some people retweet each tweet I do. So there are some people in this bowl with like four or five entries, six entries.
Well, let's hope they get it because they could be the triple L.
Triple L.
The lucky loyal listener.
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay, our first triple L.
Let's see it. It's coming out. Which one are you going to choose? Let's hear it.
Dig deep in the bowl. No.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
No.
Let me see it. I watched Catfish pull this.
Oh, my goodness.
Is this
going to
be? Wait, I can't. Wait, where?
It's Cute Poison 10.
Oh, we love Cute Poison 10.
Yes, we do. We love it.
She is a wonderful double L. Cute Poison 10. There's a chance you're over there in the UK, which means it may take a while to get there, but go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/doublepodcast.
Oh, man, I like it when I recognize the name because it's somebody who's been in touch with us for a long time.
Yeah, give us your mailing address, and she's going to be excited about this. I think you're going to like this.
This is a splendid gift.
Yeah, all right.
All right, here we go.
Here we go, let's see.
Our second triple L.
Triple L.
Is, oh, my God. I know him so well. I know his real name. It's at Hey Ref.
Sean Gregan.
Sean Gregan.
Oh, my goodness. That just proves that if you put in multiple entries, your name really pops out a lot. So,
wow, that is great.
Sean.
This is too old school.
They are. But we have a bunch of new names in there, too. So
oh,
if
no,
you're new to the Joffrey
there.
Podcast, get in there. This bowl is just going to keep getting filled with names.
You still got a shot.
Oh, yeah. And once again, final season 7 episode, we're going to give away an autographed copy of A Game of Thrones
by
George R. R.
Martin. Wow. Okay.
And I have one other book at this Barnes & Noble. I have one other book autographed by George R.
Listen,
R. Martin. It's not from A Song of Ice and Fire, but I'm so tempted to say, hey, give it away to our loyal listeners.
Just come by. For every episode,
yeah,
but especially the last episode.
Catfish, I'm turning up the volume. Sorry, I am going to say let's start in King's Landing only because that felt like
Can I get the shorter shrift?
Yeah, the short shrift, the time we spent the least amount of time in. I'm not even sure what it was truly getting to us other than got some information about what Cersei's going to do is if she gets some money from the Iron Bank and what her next plans are.
Let me get this straight. So she's going to give them back the money she owes them
and then borrow
more. Essentially say, give me half of that back or give me twice as much as that. It seems a little kind of circular.
It sure does. We find out later in a Jaime and Bronn scene, that gold from Highgarden did get back to King's Landing. So Cersei is going to be able to do this plan. But the plan that strikes me the most is Cersei's like, I need more allies. I need more armies. The infamous, oft mentioned in the book, occasionally mentioned on the show, a group of sellswords known as the Golden Company. She's thinking about getting them with the money. If you're a book reader, you're thinking of ways, ooh, this could spin off into some interesting ways. I don't want to talk about those because they may lead to spoilers. But Cersei, at this point, she doesn't know about what happened to her troops before this. But at this point, she's feeling pretty good. She's had her boy Qyburn, my boy Qyburn, reach out to the Golden Company. Is that going to be enough? Or is Cersei just learn the hard way, once she finds out about this, that there's no point.
I mean, before she could only afford the bronze company. So I'm glad she skipped right over silver and she's going to gold.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is that when she talks about hiring the gold company, she gives us a little tease of what she plans to do. She's like, I'm going to get this golden company, this group of sellsores, because I need to expand my armies and my navies. But the line that really makes me wonder is she says, I need to recover some things back. I need to get some, recover some things that belong to me is the technical term.
Right, that someone's in arrears. So,
what do you think she needs to get back that belongs to her? Do you think it's evil Uncle Tyrion and she wants him back and she thinks if she has a group of sellsores, she'll be able to get them? Or is she already looking to the north? Because she doesn't know about this defeat yet, and maybe she thinks, okay, I need the north back. It's part of my kingdoms. Those were the two places my mind went. Any other ideas? What could she want back?
Well, I mean, now that Euron has proved he's pretty good on the seas, He could be anywhere. We see him, and we know people get around real fast in this world
nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah, nowadays. So, so maybe she's going to send Euron against one group, and she's going to send these golden guys against another group. But I think it's right. I think you're right. I think it's Tyrion, and then it's Sansa.
Oh, that would because be a remember, great call. Oh my god, that would be a great call
for anybody who might have forgotten. We were reminded again tonight that the word on the street is still that it was Sansa who took down Joffrey. Now, of course, we here on the Joffrey podcast know that that was Joffrey's plan to pretend that he was dead. He's going to come and mop up after all this is over.
Yeah, he's going to, you know, let me put it this way, and I love His Grace King Joffrey. He's going to need a huge mop. We're talking multiple mops.
We're going to need a bigger mop.
It's going to be the greatest mop. It's the best mop. It's wonderful. You're going to love it. You're going to get so sick of mopping. All right, so now let's get to the place, which I think had some great moments, but I just wanted more emotion.
Uh-huh.
We get to Winterfell on an opening of this Valyrian steel dagger, and more hints and clues in this. Littlefinger is trying to suck up to the Starks. He's like, you'll be my brother-in-law soon once I marry your sister, Sansa Bran.
Right. You could have been my stepson. I couldn't take care of that. But hey.
And so he's given away a priceless dagger. And Bran, this is, I think, another big hit. Bran says to him, do you know who this dagger belonged to? And I think Bran, Three-Eyed Raven Bran, is going back in time. Remember, we saw a drawing of this dagger in a book Sam found in the restricted area of the Citadel in episode 1 of season 7.
Right.
I'm wondering if he's going to say this dagger belonged to Aegon the Conqueror or belonged to some...
Right. I'm surprised he didn't say it, because now Bran likes to discomfort people by telling them things that they don't know, or their private secrets. Remember when you stole that hot pie from Marjorie next door when you were 12?
Yeah, and so Littlefinger, he always says knowledge is power, but he's going up against somebody more powerful. And this is going to sound crazy because that end battle is so good, but this moment where Three-Eyed Bran totally shuts down Littlefinger and says, chaos is a ladder. And Littlefinger's face, that is awesome.
First of all, I knew you were going to love that. Not only was it great, but honestly, you would probably use that phrase in at least 20 different podcasts. You love the chaos is a ladder phrase. We played around with it a lot on this podcast. So for you to hear it again, it was almost as the writer was saying, we know how popular the Joffrey podcast is. Let's tickle Bubba's funny bone.
And then Littlefinger's like, I'm out of here. But Bran is just so stone cold, and this is heartbreaking. I almost need Juwadi to hit these strings more. It's okay if Bran totally gas faces Littlefinger, but to do this to Mira Reed,
you know?
Oh my God!
Sometimes you give me a hard time because sometimes I don't focus enough. I didn't sense that Bran was this not himself last year.
That is a great point, Catfish, and I've been meaning to talk about it. In episode 10, of season six. Like the last time we saw Bran, he was having that vision where he found out about the truth about Jon Snow's mother. And he's there at the Tower of Joy, that area where he called to his father. And he saw Jon Snow's mother, his aunt Lyanna, hand it to young Ned. And Bran was acting with so much emotion. He was still Bran in that scene.
Right.
We come back to season seven, and I don't know if it's because he's just getting more and more thoughts in there.
I think,
but this is just tough. This is for somebody like me who loves the character of Bran Stark, seeing what's become of my boy. It's tough, and then seeing his inhumanity, you know, the way he's been screwed up so much, being tough to poor Mira Reed,
yeah,
who lost a brother for him. She's mentioning this. This is heartbreaking.
He did intimate last week that once the old Three Raven died, it kind of got poured into him. And I think he said it again tonight that Bran is still in there, but he's now like one voice among many.
Right. And
it makes me think,
yeah,
that he's not, you know, because he doesn't have sort of worldly concerns anymore. It makes me think he's not going to rush to tell anybody about Jon Snow's parentage, because who cares?
Right.
Maybe Bran cares, but maybe the guy who was the three-eyed raven three-eyed ravens ago doesn't care, so he's not going to say anything.
But let me ask you this. Did you feel the pain for poor Mira Reed that I felt in this scene? Is this the last we're going to see of Mira Reed, who's going home to be with her family when the long night comes? I can't imagine it is, but this is a painful exit for her. It's not like after this exit, she's going to run up and say, oh, I can't wait to see the Starks again.
If I were her, I would have been like, I have been dragging your ass all around north of the wall, and I don't get just a little bit of something.
Well, that's what she's going to post on her Facebook page.
Yeah, right, right.
She's going to take it out on him on social media.
#mad.
But I was sad for Mira.
It is very sad. Well, it's sad because I think we really get the, you know, okay, Sansa, he didn't have that much emotional reaction, but he has been away from her for a long time.
Yeah.
But really, Mira has been with him through this transformation.
Right, since season three.
So if he's going to be emotionless with her, we know that Bran, the Bran we knew, is completely gone. Because it's got nothing to do with, okay, I just haven't known these people. I haven't been hanging out with these people for 4 years. Mira is the closest thing she has, and the fact that he's shows no emotion means he's gone.
Yeah. In her line, I think it's a great written line. You did die in that cave. You know, hopefully Bran's powers will help us in the wars to come, the war to come in the long night. But you're going to watch, everybody's going to go back and watch that very first episode before all the tragedy fell on House Stark and see that cute little kid who was Bran and be like, what a waste. Yeah. Sorry, I'm kidding.
Little is the operative word, because when he bumped into Arya, I was like, gosh, wasn't he shorter than her when they started this?
Well, this is terrible. He's in the medieval wheelchair, and he's still taller than her.
Yeah, I know. He's huge, that guy.
Arya Stark is in the snow. There was a part of me that thought, oh, it'd be great to see Mira Reed on her horse walking past Arya and Arya walking north. No, instead we get another callback. These writers love callbacks. Back in season one, I believe it was episode 5, when Arya was, you know, chasing a cat, she ends up down in the cavern, she hears Varys and Illyrio, a guy we haven't seen since season one. She sneaks out of the castle of King's Landing, she tries to get back in, and they're like, hey boy, you're not, the two guards at King's Landing are like, hey, you're not allowed to be in here. Arya has to say, I'm Arya Stark. I'm not a boy. I'm Arya Stark, daughter of the Hand of the King, Ned Stark. We're getting this recreated here with these two guards at Winterfell. Come the hell on. Arya's right. We need to go to LinkedIn and find somebody better than these two bozos. It was a bit frustrating to have to waste time on these idiots.
Well, the funny thing is that I, as she's walking up there, I thought, these guys are very casual. I mean, you think people would be on more alert. They're afraid they might get attacked from the south. And somebody just kind of casually walks up, and you got Beavis and Butthead here working the front door.
Right.
And I actually thought, I mean, the way they did this, I guess, was interesting, but I thought she would be a little bit more powerful or do something to sort of really flex her newfound skills to get into the castle. When basically she's like, no, I am.
Right. I think she looked at these two guys and said, these are some ugly faces. I don't need them. And so she went the pacifist route.
Right, right.
And she kind of almost did the exact same route, though, she did in the season one, where she was like, listen, go tell my father, Hand of the King, where she's like, you know, hey, you're going to tell my sister, if I'm wrong, no big deal. But if I'm right, you're going to find me. These guards, after some really fiddly-dee, hey, you stay here. Once again, I would have loved this time that we spent on this. Not that it was bad. I'm not sure it was good. But if we had spent more time with Sansa, Arya, and Bran talking rather right. than this.
And if the girl disappears, how realistic are they going to say, well, there was a girl, but we lost her. But let me tell you what she said.
Now, this episode was directed by Matt Shakman. This is the first episode of Game of Thrones he's ever directed. Now, Catfish, you were looking at his credits. He's done a lot of good stuff. You were saying a Mad Men?
Yeah, he did a Mad Men, but most of his stuff is in comedy. He has done dozens of episodes of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
You would think that's where the double D's met him.
Yeah.
Because they wrote that episode of David Benioff and Dan Weiss wrote that episode of It's Always Sunny. And so I would imagine that's where it came through. But the only knock I want to give him as a director, for somebody who hasn't done much action, I think the action, again, at the end of this is great. But this one little odd cut where Arya disappears from the guard was odd.
That's an editing thing. I don't know why. It really feels like something. It feels like something skipped. I mean, we get the guy almost mid-sentence, but it doesn't seem to make sense.
Right. Maybe they cut off them talking about something that later in the plot we can't have them reveal yet. They go up. Apparently one of the guards is named Conor. Yeah, he's a total Conor. They go up and tell Sansa about this. Oh, she's just some Wintertown girl. But once they mention the people we've lost, like Sir Roderick in season two when Theon cut off his head.
Now, what is it
and
there?
Maester Luwin.
All you got to do is drop some names and Sansa hurries down.
She knows those names. She remembers season one and two where those guys died.
Oh, it's the whole idea that nobody else is left who remembers those names.
Right. Let's drop some Jory in there, too. She says, I know where she is. Sansa goes down to the crypts of Winterfell. And this the very first sentence, once again, it's fighting up against me. Arya saying, do I have to call you Lady Stark now? And then Sansa saying, yes. I love that later they have a smile. I love that later they hug. But in my own mind, they're a bit cold. And when they were hugging, I even mentioned it. I mentioned Arya is almost as cold as Bran with.
Well, but the thing is, we thought it was going to be that way. But then kind of Arya hugs and grabs her at the end. So there's still some feeling there. So at least she's not. It's funny how we thought she would be. That's really how Bran is.
Right.
And so maybe she's a little cold, but next to Bran, she's the life of the party.
Right. They didn't mention Bran for the longest time in this talking, and I kept saying, mention Bran. I'll mention Rickon, R.I.P. Rickon. Arya really hasn't heard a lot of stuff. She didn't realize about Maester Luwin and Roderick. I suppose she might have assumed, but she didn't. She didn't know about any of this northern stuff till Hotpyre got her up. And she's now become an art critic. She's walking through the Louvre and saying, this doesn't look like Ned Stark. And a real tragic line about we're the only ones who really remember what he looked like. And so,
yeah, but it's funny. She does sort of try to give Sansa a feel like, I've got a list. And Sansa laughs and Arya's like, okay, yeah, sure, that's a joke.
Right. Well, Arya, do you think Arya was really jealous because she saw that play? She's probably heard some rumors. She's like, did you kill Joffrey with Tyrion? She doesn't say with Tyrion, but she asks Sansa, did you kill Joffrey? They both laugh because neither of them could.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think they're just laughing at the absurdity of the idea.
Here we are on the Joffrey podcast. He's always mentioned. So many characters have left the show for a bit. Joffrey, first of his name, first in your hearts. They'll never forget. So,
and I think they're using kill as a euphemism.
Right. And so,
like, I wish I had with Joffrey. I wish I had with Joffrey too.
Bran is out by his tree, out by his meditation place, his vision place, and we have a reunion between Arya and Bran. Arya and Bran, you think back to that very first episode of Game of Thrones where Bran was upset because Arya was so much better at shooting arrows than he was and fighting, and they pushed each other when they were trying to line up for King Robert to see him. And now they've just, all three of them, they've been through much. This is a great hug. Arya's eyes actually display some emotion when she hugs Bran that I don't think she really had when she hugged her sister. But this Bran, he can't ever come up with anything nice. So he starts nice. Hey, I saw you at the end of the crossroads. And he knows about the list, and he just mentions
that was the great thing where he said, yes, he just drops the knowledge about the list. I love it when he just drops things in and people are just like, they look around like, did I hear that? Did I imagine that? Like,
right.
Well, wait, what? So it's very cool. I'd like him to start saying things that are useful.
Oh, yeah.
Like about Jon Snow, stuff like that.
Well, you say useful. Who knows if it's really useful other than a Jeopardy question. Hey, who are Lyanna Stark, Ed Rhaegar Targaryen. Who is Jon Snow's parents? Who are Jon Snow's parents?
I also would like Arya, when she said most of them are dead, for her to have dropped, some of them by me.
Right. I love this bit about the dagger, this kind of pass the hot Valyrian dagger between Bran and Arya. Bran is giving her this dagger. He's like, listen, I don't need it. I wonder if Bran has seen a vision of Arya using this dagger. He says something just so cold and painful to hear. What good is it for me anymore? What good is it with a cripple? And then Arya gets the dagger, and she finds out about Littlefinger and her face. Because she saw Littlefinger plotting for the Lannisters back in Harrenhal in season 2. Arya's face when she's like, Littlefinger's here. Littlefinger's here?
Yeah. This is going to keep – it's funny. Now that we're bringing back people together, there's a whole lot of people – who, and it happens later on in the episode, mm-hmm. are going to meet and sort of be allied with people who they've been carrying grudges for a long time.
Yes. Now, there is a great question Arya asks where she's like, this is a Valyrian steel dagger. Why would a cutthroat, you know, just some lowlife, try to kill Bran with a Valyrian steel dagger? Why would he have it? Arya's smart enough to pick up on this. Boy, that doesn't make any sense. Bran drops an important line. He says, someone very wealthy wanted me dead. Is that person Littlefinger or is it someone else? There's an answer people believe in the books. I have argued in the third book, A Storm of Swords, people, meaning Jaime and Tyrion, assume it's this one person. I've always thought that was kind of a weak answer. It didn't make too much sense to me. I wonder if the show is going to go that way. I don't want to say it to spoil the books. But what rich man would want Bran Stark dead? Littlefinger, it caused chaos. It certainly helped the War of Five Kings grow. Is there another rich man who wanted Bran dead?
It's funny. Unlike Jon Snow's parentage, at this point, it would be really hard for that to be a shock. Like, whoever it is, we don't think it's going to be one of the people who we think are their allies. I mean, we know Littlefinger's bad. We know.
I throw out a crazy idea?
Yeah.
Because I've always thought the book answer that some characters in the book come to was rather weak, and it would make sense for Littlefinger, and if they go that way, I understand. But if somehow, some way, who's another rich man? I was just mentioning them a while ago. Varys and Illyrio were rich men. Illyrio was an incredibly rich man. Now, why would Illyrio try to kill Bran Stark?
It doesn't make any sense.
Way back when, that discussion in the dungeon doesn't fit my crazy tinfoil hat theory, but they wanted chaos in the realm so that, at the time, the Targaryens could come in and reclaim the throne. What if they were also practicing a bit of chaos? It makes much more sense for Littlefinger to do it. But the fact that Bran didn't just come out and say, Littlefinger wanted me dead.
But why Bran? First of all, he's at that point, he's not the eldest son. They're not even that. They're not that the Starks aren't that important. You know what I mean? It's like if you're going to strike at someone to try to cause chaos in the kingdom, you don't do it to, you know, the third son up in the north.
Well, he would have been the second son then, but okay. Why you do it? You cause chaos. You wanted the Starks and Lannisters fighting. Who was to say? Now let's say
third
who
son.
Was to
third
say
son.
Who is the third son? Rick? You think Rickon
Bran.
Did it?
Bran.
Well, John doesn't count. He's a bastard. Even if he was who he was, he would not. He'd be John wouldn't count. Rickon would be the third.
I'm just
son.
Saying. I luckily stumbled upon the truth, and I just want to say that.
But. Why wouldn't Bran say it was Littlefinger? What other rich man could it be? Tywin was a rich man. Why would, you know, I don't...
Yeah, it doesn't... But what I'm saying is that at least your explanation leads us to later on that causing problems
right.
if they're going to ally with Daenerys. But at this point, unless it's something like that, it doesn't make any sense to hide it because it's not going to be a surprise. At least to us... You know, they set it up again with the preview where Littlefinger's trying to sow the seeds of discord mm-hmm. that it's Tyrion who had it. So you still would assume that it's Littlefinger, but I still like your idea better because it means later on we've got some issues we have to settle.
I love this scene of the Stark girls pushing Bran through the courtyard here in Winterfell. Brienne and Pod are noting Pod's trying to talk Brienne up. And Brienne is, I think, telling the truth here. She's like, you know, I really, really, you know, I did save Sansa from Ramsay's Hunters those one times, but otherwise, I kind of did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that. I think Littlefinger watching all this, my mind is thinking, what is he thinking?
Well, if she did, if Brienne did her job, when the Stark sisters met, they wouldn't have both confided that they've had a real tough time in life so far.
Sticking up in Winterfell, you know, I guess, you know, I dinged it down to a 9 instead of a 10 because I wanted more emotion between these three siblings who haven't been together. I guess you would, it to be generous from the second episode. But instead, we get a scene that I still actually loved a lot. Arya proving that she kicks MFNA.
However, at the end of this, there's a little bit of... And I noticed it ahead of time, mm-hmm. but I think they really pushed it at the end by some extreme Littlefinger mustache twirling to where we get to the point to emphasize
Littlefinger's in a bad place.
This is a bad place. But this is a mistake by Arya. This is something she should have learned already. You don't show off. You don't let people know what your strengths are. Now, right now, he doesn't know that his strength also is that...
She can go undercover.
Somebody who looks just like him could stab him.
That person you see in the mirror could stab you. That's correct. You know, it would seem unbelievable to have Arya be able... Little Maisie Williams, the actress who plays Arya, battle Brienne of Tarth... But this scene really worked for me. Well, they made this scene work in the way the Sand Snakes couldn't work way back in season 5.
They did a great job in that you see that there is a way in which, you know, Arya is definitely a disadvantage. When Brienne kicks her to the ground, it's like...
Yeah, she got kicked to the curb.
She's got the physical strength. But she really does show off here. And the cool thing that it does is... I feel like when Sansa first meets Arya, she doesn't pick up on that coldness.
No.
Because Arya hugs her again, and then they laugh about the ha-ha-ha, the list. But then when Bran says Cersei's on her list, Sansa's like, oh, man, there is a list. And then when Sansa sees Arya kick ass like this, it's more like, wow, yes, she has changed.
Right. Is Sansa at that moment you thinking, what happened to my poor little sister? Or is Sansa... thinking strategically, thinking of every possibility, enemies where, allies there. Is Sansa thinking, who else is on your list?
Once you plan it out loud in your head, nothing is a surprise.
Right. And Sansa, it could be as cold as, hey, you got people on your list? Go get them. You know, could Sansa unleash her little sister? Is this scene proving to Sansa that maybe Brienne isn't her best protector and knight? I need my sister to protect me, not you, Brienne. Is Brienne going to be out of a job and on LinkedIn?
You mean she will no longer be fulfilling that vital function of keeping the Stark sister safe as she has been for all these years?
Well, that one time that Ramsay's Hunter, she did that one time Ramsay's Hunter were there.
Now, I thought they were supposed to spar with wooden swords, but Brienne's sword?
Brienne's sword looks like a dull blade because okay. it's certainly not the Valyrian steel sword
you hit someone who's 70 pounds dripping wet with a big dull blade. It's still going to really hurt.
You know, we've been talking a lot about our ideas, listeners. I want you guys, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/DoublePodcast. I want you to go there and tell us, what do you think is going to go on with Arya now that she has this awesome Valyrian steel dagger? Who's she going to stab with it? I also want you guys to tell us what you think Sansa's thinking when she sees her little sister be a total badass. That's an interesting face to read. Is she disturbed?
No, I think that's what's happening is that you said there needed to be more talking, but I got it through the three scenes she did, where she's like, holy cow, things really have changed. And Littlefinger twirling of the mustache and the smile, and Arya's like, should not have shown him I'm dangerous.
I remember Harrenhal is what Arya Stark is thinking.
Okay.
And Littlefinger, I love Littlefinger, but he shouldn't be there, man. He is in a bad, let me say it one more time. He's in a bad spot, dude. That is not good.
Now,
not good
at all.
Is it
possible he's thinking, maybe this is the Stark for me? I mean, it was his mother, it was her mother,
right.
And then her sister, and maybe he's like, This is finally I've met a female Stark that's as bloodthirsty as I am.
Yeah, I know. He's like Ser Meron. Too old, Sansa. Too old. Give me Arya. All right, so I can't wait to see what's going to happen up north in Winterfell. I love so many of the characters there. It's so good. But now we need to get to the place which had a lot of action last week. We need to go to a little island. You were on the island of Hawaii here. In the Pacific Ocean,
right.
Let's go into Blackwater Bay, right there where it meets the Narrow Sea, and let's go to the Isle of Dragonstone. This is Jon Snow and Daenerys on their first date.
Very romantic first date. Very romantic. He did that move. That's your move when you take a woman to a cave and then you grab her arm to point the torch somewhere else.
Oh, let me show you.
And you just sort of, yeah. It's right over here. And then...
Yeah, a lot of times on OKCupid, it's like, mm-hmm. I like long walks in caves, meeting new people.
Let me show you what I learned in a cave. Now, the thing that I thought Daenerys had learned a lot, but she still seems a little too trusting.
She's trusting a Missandei when Missandei's like, lots of things happen with me in Grey Worm.
I think she's more trusting because those guys have been in that cave for a whole day. They couldn't have scratched out a few pictographs on the wall.
Right.
Don't mind the shavings on the floor, Daenerys.
John, I didn't give you a good introduction last week, but Sir Davos, I've come through. I've started making scratchings on the wall. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to tell her that these are cave drawings that show the White Walkers being fought by man and the children of forest coming together. Then you say that, Jon Snow. You say it. I can't say it in my Flea Bottom accent. And then we'll get her on our side.
Yeah. She, now, despite the romance, and I like what they do here.
Well, you've lost me. The Jon Snow romance.
What they did with the Jon Snow Daenerys scene, because you can see that they have kind of an affinity for each other. She's sympathetic to his cause,
yeah.
Even though she's staying where she is. Now him, you know, you can't ever tell what emotion he's feeling besides glum, because even when he was in the throes of passion,
mm-hmm.
still glum.
Oh, he in that cave with Ygritte, he had some fun. You know, when he said, look at all this dragon glass, this is all we'll ever need. Didn't you wish there was a hot tub there, like in his Ygritte cave? He's like,
yeah.
Here, let me bring you over here.
Yeah.
So these drawings, this, as somebody who's read the books multiple times, I've read the infamous The World of Ice and Fire, I honestly can't remember. We're going to have to go to our good friends at the History of Westeros or our good friends at Radio Westeros, that the Children of the Forest and Man actually fought the White Walkers at Dragonstone 2? I guess it makes sense. This certainly was the Long Night. They would have fought them everywhere. But ignore the history. Ignore the petroglyphs. Ignore the Fist of the First Men cave drawings, even though to me there's so many spirals. It's like, are you sure the White Walkers didn't carve those? You know, the Children of the Forest and the White Walkers seem to love spirally logos.
Right. But there was, I mentioned it, but just to kind of emphasize it, you know, even though they both have the affairs of state that they're interested in, mm-hmm. and they're sort of diametrically opposed at this point anyway, they still seem to have an affinity and a respect for each other.
Well, Daenerys is just excited to meet a guy she can look in the eye. He's short, Jon Snow.
Not, and a guy she outweighs. Now, she believes him now.
Right. Wait, they're drawings? I believe you now.
Yeah.
But she still wants...
Well, but that's the thing. She drives a hard bargain, this one does.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to it later, but it seems to me in this episode we're starting to get the idea that, you know, the 5 years she spent learning how to be a just and wise and kind ruler.
Yeah.
That those 5 years may be going right out the damn window.
Well, hold on. This was the tweet that I tweeted out. If you haven't seen it, I'm just going to recreate it here. Ring, 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 ring.
Who's there?
Ben.
Ben who?
Ben Denis. That's what she wants him to do.
It's not just that, and that's why I say we're going to get to it later, but that's not the part that makes me think that she's unlearning the things she learned.
Right.
But she is... As you would imagine, someone who's gathered a huge army.
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't know this guy from Adam. You know, he's barely 5 foot tall. I'm just kidding. And so she doesn't trust him. And in fact,
she's going to trust him in a couple of minutes, though.
Just the fact that she said, I will join you if you bend the knee. And then she doesn't quite seem to get it. And he... for good reasons, doesn't explain to her. She's like, you're their king. You can explain it to them. You know, what he could have said was, you know, I barely held on coming here. Just coming here, there was a lot of protests against me. And so...
Right. He could say, I tried to explain the Night's Watch about the Night King and the Army of the Dead. They stabbed me. I tried to explain to Northerners to come fight for our cause against the Boltons. They didn't.
They said I was stupid to come here.
Right.
Yeah. But even worse than Jon Snow's position is, Daenerys is supposed to have wise counsel. She's got Varys there. She's got Tyrion there. Jon Snow might be not an enemy at this point. However, if you're going to discuss how things are going in war, maybe do it away from the company.
Right. Oh, yeah, let me bend the knee now that I've heard you lost all your allies and forces.
Right.
So, evil Uncle Tyrion,
mm-hmm.
this guy, both he and Varys should Ooh. Be taking a task. They've epic fail. Hashtag mini fail for Uncle Tyrion.
They got their butts whooped.
Yes, in just 3 episodes.
But according to you, she should have known already. Because when she left and left Tyrion in charge, you didn't like the plans that he made. I thought they were good last year.
Yeah.
In Marine, right. But yeah, she upbraids him.
But you say she doesn't trust Jon. Here, she turns to Jon Snow. She must trust him enough. Hey, ally, I just had my tail kicked. What do you think we should do? And Jon Snow, ever the nice guy, is this why they're all going to lose to Cersei?
She's like, I want someone over 5 foot tall who's got all his complete package to give me some advice.
Right, well, we didn't see everywhere Jon Snow was stabbed, so he might have his complete package. But Jon Snow also preaching, hey, you got to be cool. Be cool, Daenerys. Be cool. You can't burn up cities or people won't think you're breaking the infamous wheel.
Right. And so that is what... My concern is, at the first sign of trouble, you know, she's like, I got dragons. And she had said earlier.
That should be at the first sign of trouble, second sign of trouble. That should be at every sign of trouble. I've got dragons.
But you know what? She agreed a couple episodes ago that to have foreign invaders and dragons intimidating people is not the way to get the Westeros on your side.
Right. But to let your allies get slaughtered by armies, that's also not the good way to build allies. Correct?
I agree with you. I think there could have been, you know, she could have waited a little bit longer. She could have tried some other stuff before bringing out the barbecue. But it made for a great episode.
It did. Let's finish up Dragonstone, where Jon Snow and Davos are marching down these stairs. Are they just so bored? Hey, let's go walk on the stairs again. He's like, you know, I walked in a cave with Daenerys. Right. She's left, so you're my number two.
He said, look who's just sitting down here in the middle of nowhere, just hanging out, not even looking at the sea.
Oh, you think this was Davos? Like, there's the hottie. I'm going to go talk to the hottie.
No, Mr. Day's just hanging out.
Well, you do not want to give it up for Davos to say, what do you think of her? And Jon Snow, who are you talking about? Oh, what a buffoon. Davos is like, no, you know which one I'm talking about. Jon Snow, she has a good heart. This is a line that you would drop, Catfish.
Hell yes,
Davos.
Davos
said, yeah, I've seen you staring at her heart. Oh, man, so
cool. You got to stare hard.
Hold on. Listen to me. That's going to be used in an attack ad. Jon Snow's going to say, that's just locker room talk. Very, very cold.
But now, Davos gets in another good zinger at the very end of this conversation.
Oh, he does.
But let's talk about the conversation first.
But no. Wait, are you talking about the lesser, fewer zinger? Because we got to talk about that, too.
No.
Davos learned. He learned how to read from Shireen. He learned the difference between less and fewer from Stannis. So when you have that callback, oh, so good. That's so wonderful. Not everybody loves Stannis. Stannis, I think, is a much more likable character in the books because I believe you do get to understand him more. But Jon Snow's like 10,000 or less. Davos, fewer. Loved dropping that bomb on him. But Davos, for somebody who occasionally would mention, my wife, don't talk about my wife, he sees Missandei like I did in that supermarket one time. He forgets everybody else. It's like, hello. Now,
he also drops another good one. Speaking of good hearts, wah, wah, Missandei.
Oh, no, man.
It's the line
what a sexist
drops.
Davos.
So Missandei sort of gives him the party line. I guess this was necessary for Jon Snow to hear from somebody to say, like, I just trust her. She's a great person. She learned. It took her 5 years to learn not to just roast people left and right. Whoops. No. And then at the end, Davos drops a good one. He's like, is it too late to go over to her?
Right. Yes. Please. Let's do this. Get on the winning side. That's what Davos always needs to do. And we get a reunion that, even though I probably could have figured it out from the trailers, I was thinking about other things. And so to see Jon Snow and Theon, these guys haven't seen each other, theoretically, since the second episode of Game of Thrones in season one. But I'm not sure they actually had any scenes together in the second episode of season one. So I think these guys only had scenes together in the first episode ever of Game of Thrones.
Now,
boy, Jon Snow.
Now, you know I'm
there
bad.
There would be a million things to beat up Theon about.
You know I'm bad. But Theon pretended to roast Rickon.
And Bran, right.
And at what point did Jon realize or hear that that was not true? He doesn't still think that's true, does he?
No, he theoretically, going by the show, this is different in the books, but going by the show, at the beginning of season four, it was when John and Sam were talking about John's plan to go get the guys who took over Craster's, meaning Carl from Gin Alley and Rast. Sam and John were talking about, Sam says, man, I ran into your brother Bran. I let him go north of the wall. John is like, well, he might have gone to Craster's. That was the last time Jon Snow ever talked about Bran for the longest time. But theoretically, if that scene exists, the show wants you to believe that Jon Snow knows that Bran and Rickon were not roasted alive.
It's just that for at least a few glorious moments, Theon actually took over Winterfell.
For him, a few glorious moments.
Right, but that's going to be... Because let's face it, okay, so he took over...
He betrayed Robb. He killed, beheaded Sir Roderick, who we got a name drop in this. He killed two innocent boys. Maybe Theon didn't necessarily kill him, but it was his kind of men, and he led this. Theon was just terrible. He has a lot of sins to pay for. Now he says he wants to find a way to go rescue his sister. Is Theon capable of this? Is there any hope for Yara, who we should believe is still alive? What do you think?
I believe you argued this earlier in the season when we were just a couple episodes ago when, you know, that Theon was sitting around watching Yara and Ilaria start to get it on. And you were like, I believe you had a concern about what is Theon's function in this show anymore?
It wasn't a concern. I was just asking. Alfie Allen's a great actor. That's the way I don't have a concern. No, He'll do something.
That's the way I feel tonight, though. I feel like he's going to have to do something great because they are really keeping him around when it seems like he doesn't have much. I mean, okay, sure, Jon Snow gets to grab him and whatever, but, you know, again, now his men don't respect him. They rightly said, you know,
If
you'd really tried, you'd be dead, bro. That's the way it works.
Yo, bro. So, do you have any guesses of what Theon will do? Will he go on an unsuccessful mission to save his sister? Will Theon take down Euron? You would think on a typical story, that probably would be the way it goes.
I guess I've just given up on... There's been so many chances for Theon to actually... And pardon, again, sort of a pun here, grow a pair.
Hey.
But I just don't think I would... I can't see what would actually cause him to do that at this point. So many times he should have been pushed over the edge. I can't see him getting pushed over the edge. I just see he's broken. So I don't know what his function is going to be in this show.
Well, I think he's going to survive somehow. I've always said that the infamous title of the fourth episode's Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things... is George R. R. Martin's own creed. Those are the people he loves. Those are the people who, quote-unquote, are going to make it out of this alive. Theon now is a cripple. He was a bastard. He's got two. And he's a broken thing. He's got all three covered.
Yeah, he's
good. All right, Catfish, we're going to have to get to the action-packed excitement.
Let's do it.
Did you know that this was going to come? I suspected this was going to come based on little scenes in the trailer and a little scene of... they released on Twitter about five hours before the episode aired. Did you know we were going to get this blowout, awesome action scene, Catfish?
I mean, how many can we get in this season? They're just going to just keep throwing them at us. I thought, no way we're going to have another one so soon.
Well, let's just go through them. We had Euron's attack in episode 2.
Amazing.
We had the two kind of joint battles, which admittedly both got cut short a bit.
They were good action in the Casterly Rock one. But it was, I mean, you know, the Casterly Rock one was okay.
Grey Worm kicking butt.
That was good. But then the other one was just kind of a fait accompli at the end, except for, which I never got to talk about, Olenna's peace out moment was just fabulous.
All right, so let's start in what we assume. Oh, well, actually, we see it. They're walking away from Highgarden. They've got the lovely, and you only see a brief shot of this. I wanted more of it. You see the Tarly forces and their shield, which is looks like a red archer on a green field background here. And they've got their own unique helmets. I love these Tarly forces. I actually grew to like Dickon in this episode. Dickon was a stand-up guy.
He was cool.
He was kind of a good one last year as well as he could be. Instead, he should have told his dad to shut up and stop beating up his brother Samwell.
Now, there is a little funny thing here that they do. Theoretically, Jaime's supposed to stay with the gold the whole way.
Right.
But we know that two things have to happen that would be in conflict with one another. One, Cersei needs to get the gold, and this fight needs to happen away from King's Landing.
Right.
So even though Jaime's supposed to be with the whole we get this heavy-duty exposition drop. The gold has made it safely to King's Landing.
You got to let that down. Are you happy that Bronn... got paid. I don't think he's going to be able to hold on to that payment.
No, he looked at his money lovingly before he ran for the hills.
Are you still a Braun man? Do you still love Braun? The fact that he just got paid a big sack of gold and he's still bitching, baby.
He's still talking smack. I love it.
Oh, my God.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. This is exactly the way to roll, man. It's the squeaky wheel that gets the grease.
So the Tarleys come up to Jamie and Braun after Braun's complained, and Randall is, we've gotten the gold, we took Highgarden, now they're going to every farm in the Reach and demanding all the food. Oh, this is stone cold. What are the people in the Reach going to eat? It's winter, man. Oy, not nice.
Winter's coming. And
winter's here, yeah.
Well, I mean, it depends. If you like your food hot, now's the time.
It's been cooked, dragon roasted. And so we see Braun go off with the Tarleys to go get that food. And so that is implying these two separate forces we've got. The next time we see Jamie and Braun, they are once again giving Dickon grief. This was Dickon's first battle. And he turned out okay. He mentions the infamous line that Robert mentioned back in season one about, boy, you know, when people die or they just get really afraid, they lose control of their bowels. And they just loved laughing at that. Did you love Braun laughing at Dickon's name? Oh, that's
yeah.
Not nice.
Yeah, that was
it.
There was some good humorous moments in an episode that needed it because it had some serious, affecting moments.
We were talking about this director being a comedy director. He's going to play in some parts. He's going to play up the comedy. And I think these little comedy moments did do actually very, very well. But Dickon, once again, I think he's dead, but this guy was a stand-up guy. He when the battle came, when they're friggin' Dothraki and dragons coming at you, and Dickon's not afraid to fight, give it up for my boy. His dad, Sam's dad, Papa Tarly, Randall Tarly, this guy, he wants to flog his own troops because he's like, we got to get back over the Blackwater Rush.
We know that his parenting skills run to the authoritarian.
Say that again.
Plus, he's so bitter. He's in his battle the whole time. He's thinking, that damn fat bastard took my sword.
Right, right. Why did he ever try to go get the damn sword? This man's obsessed with it.
I just want him to say it once. I'd love to have that little dropped in there because I'm not sure a lot of people realize that that's Samwell's father.
Yeah, they need to keep hitting it. I think one of the things I want to talk about is the digital geography they made this land. Now, they filmed this area in Spain, and they give it this kind of Western feel. I would not imagine between King's Landing and Highgarden, the Reach, a.k.a. the Reach is King's Landing's breadbasket, that we would go through a part that, to me, looks like the American West. But, or, you know...
Yeah, it's like a prairie.
Right, it's like a prairie, but these rock formations remind me of the United States Western area. But then I came to Gruet, so it wasn't how I imagined Westeros to look there, Gruet. Then I grew to love it because it wasn't what I imagined Westeros to look in the area, I believe, south of the Blackwater Rush coming from the Reach. But this whole fight almost has a bit of a Western feel towards it.
Like you have the Western forces and the kind of like Native American forces.
Right. That,
and when those
it has
guys,
a pull of that.
When those guys, that was so thrilling, there's so much stuff. When the guys stood up on their horses to shoot the arrows, I was like, that is so badass.
It is badass. I want to say that my favorite shot in this whole battle, and there were a million of them, actually was one of the first one. When Braun notices, hey, there's a sound. You hear that? You hear that? And they look off in the distance over this ridge. But then suddenly you note this ridge is just littered with horses. They're so small, they're so far away that they're incredibly tiny. But then, oh my God, here we go. Oh my goodness gracious, that was hardcore. That was like, this is the type of size battles that George R. R. Martin wanted in his story.
And they really set this up. I mean, you heard it for a really long time before you saw it. So I didn't even still believe. I was like, are the Dothraki really here? Honestly, I expected the dragons, then got to Dothraki, and then wasn't even thinking about the dragons anymore, and then the dragon shows up. Right. I mean, that's double D, Dothraki plus the dragons.
Look at the size. Look at all these extras. Jamie realizes, oh, snap. This also, believe it or not, to me, calls back to season one, where Robert, King Robert, bless his heart, where he said, only a fool would meet the Dothraki in the field. You know, we'd hide in the castles behind our walls. And you're about to see, even without the dragons, they were doomed. This is the end.
And Bronn at least says to Jaime, get your butt back there.
Yeah, get out of
and
here.
And he's like, no, I'm going to stay with the troops. And Bronn reminds him, you're not a troop.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, but why didn't Bronn run for the hills? Later on in the fight, I'm like, Bronn, get the F out of D.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if Jaime had only learned from the most capable, wise battlefield commander of all time, where was Joffrey during the siege of King's Landing?
In the command center, where he should be, leading
right,
from
in
behind.
In the command center, in the basement, plotting the whole thing out.
These effects, I've complained about the effects sometimes this year. The direwolves have never looked great to me. The dragons at times look great, sometimes look terrible. But this generally, these horses, and the way this was shot, once again by a guy who doesn't do a lot of action, this looks great. This looks impressive. But it also looks like a slaughter. I was so lost in the insanity of this slaughter that I didn't know. Did Randall Tarly survive? We see one bald guy on fire. Was that him?
I thought that was him, but they didn't seem to make it clear. We're going to see what's on the battlefield here later on.
And this just shows you how important a weapon dragons are. The, you know, a shield wall is very tough, which the Lannister forces have done. But when you roast a hole in a shield wall, game over, man. Game over, dude.
And then the horses ride through the flaming fighters.
I still don't think actual horses would charge through a flame like this.
They would if they're Dothraki horses. They're tough.
Oh, man. I guess. I don't know. I think even a Dothraki horse would be like, you got to be kidding.
Oh, I mean, and then you see the horses going over a soldier,
ashes,
which is completely
already
ash already.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
And their scythes. I mean, a sword is one thing, but you see someone coming at you with a scythe, you got to be like, you guys are out of your flipping minds.
No, I'm with you. But how about this? How about this? Would the smarter Jaime Lannister just immediately lay down his sword, put up the white flag, surrender, rather than creating a field of fire too? In Aegon's conquest, 300 years before the series began, Aegon and his dragons fought forces and roasted them alive. They were pretty much, the most of the forces were from the gardeners, who, after they were slaughtered, their house, Highgarden, got taken over by the Stuarts, the Tyrells. But I'm pretty sure the Lannisters were in that fight too. This if you see a dragon roasting people, if you see all the ways you're outnumbered, bend the knee, give up. And Daenerys, it's winter. I'm sure there's some thought to this, but Daenerys destroying the supply lines, that was the food, Daenerys. Are you crazy? We got to feed people of this. Now, of course, she doesn't,
all right, but
she doesn't
really
know it's,
do
she doesn't
that.
Know it's food, but oh my God. So she's not roasting people, she's roasting dinner. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Right. Now, the only reason why I would say would not put up the flag is maybe, and I'm guessing this might be the case, that the experience with the Dothrakis is they aren't the kind of people who respect that, that they're just going to keep coming at you and coming at you and coming at you.
Right. So the archers try. I want to go just through little moments. The archers try with those arrows. Love that Drogon shields Daenerys so she can't be hit. But then, you know, she just once again is burning the living crap out of people. Holy smokes, this is insane. Jamie straddles the line between hero and villain so much. Jamie orders Bronn to get to, is it called a scorpion? I forget what this thing is called. Whatever this thing is, this giant crossbow is called. He tells Bronn to get there. And then Jamie, for a one-handed man, does a pretty good job fighting, I think. Considering, do you want to give it up for Jamie?
Well, he lasts longer than I think he should, but he's Jamie, so we can't just have some crumb bum extra kill him.
Jamie was going to die once, and then Dickon saved him.
Yeah,
so.
I was surprised that they had this thing ready and were on the march with it. Seems like a very heavy duty thing, but I do appreciate the fact that, you know, like Chekhov's gun, we saw this, and the very first time they interact with the dragons, they have one. This is what you get when you get a compressed series. It isn't, we got attacked by a dragon.
Yeah.
Now we got to figure out we've got this thing. It's like, boom, we created it. We heard about the dragons. We created it. It's in use. It seems to be fairly effective. It's not as good as a crusty 900-year-old skull. It's not as good at hitting a live dragon than an old skull, but it does seem to be effective.
Bronn has a almost a mini joust with a Dothraki riding on him. Bronn tried one of his tricks. He threw the knife he always carries behind his back. He misses the guy.
Oh, my God.
But then when the Dothraki goes low and cuts Bronn's horse's legs, oh, that was a great action beat.
I mean, that is like, this is kind of brilliant. This is like the brutal kind of smart tactics that people who fight on horses know.
Yes, and this moment with Bronn running through the burning remains.
And people on fire left and right,
I loved it. It reminded me a bit of the Jon Snow on his feet walking through the insanity of the Battle of the Bastards. Bronn walking through this.
The first arrow on Dothraki.
The first scorpion thing.
But that's really cool.
Right, there's a great shot overhead of a bunch of arrows still flying in ash because everything burned. But Bronn, not only does he waste one of the huge iron rails on the Dothraki who's chasing him, he has two shots at a dragon. Bronn, he's the man. He did it. He had nine lives to survive this.
He learned what you had to do. Remember, I thought originally, okay, they're not going to have one of these. That's stupid. They're going to have tens of them. But
he did
the right thing, though. You wait until that thing is bearing down directly at you. You know he's going to keep flying in that direction. And you just let that thing go.
Yeah. I was surprised when suddenly we cut over, and we saw Tyrion there at the battle. Tyrion, after all his defeats, maybe he needed to be on hand to actually see what war is like.
Now, I liked when he spotted Jaime, and I actually wanted, because of the history between them, Jaime let Tyrion go. As a result of that, Tyrion killed their father, Tywin. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to have Jaime see Tyrion as well, but he probably thought there was just a small child on the field.
Great shots. A couple episodes ago, we saw Yara looking out and seeing her fleet being destroyed and the emotion on her face. Our good buddy Nikolai Coster-Waldau looking out and seeing all his...
Wow.
All his people burned. There is this one shot. I'm showing it to you again, Catfish. Is this guy who removes his mask, is that Randall Tarly, or is he just bald because his hair got roasted?
I really thought it was... It could be either way.
All right. So Drogon is coming. Bronn misses a shot. But then he gets a shot off. Daenerys sees it. She realizes, okay, that's trouble. Then the dragon just keeps roasting people. The dragon comes around. And Bronn hit it. Did you think the dragon was dead when it started pummeling out of the air like that? When it started falling? That was something.
Just for practical purposes of the story, there is no way that Daenerys was going to go down tonight.
No, but the dragon could have. You know, it was
right,
above
but
water.
How can the dragon? How can the dragon go down and be completely out of control and she's fine? You know what I mean?
Right. I love Bronn's face when he thinks he's killed it. You know, that's my guy. Drogon had a long way to fall. This, if you've read The World of Ice and Fire by George R. R. Martin, this makes you think of the Dance of Dragons, the fight hundreds of years ago, not, you know, when the Targaryens had a civil war amongst themselves. But Daenerys gets control of Drogon. And I thought Bronn might have been dead here. Somehow the flames...
Well, let's just say this.
You know, that's
Bronn jumps, and unless he's Superman, he only jumped 5-6 feet.
Right.
And the radius of the flame was about 20 feet.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So he didn't survive in the wide shot, but he survived in the tight shot.
So Daenerys is trying to pull this terrible blade from Drogon.
That has got to hurt.
Yeah, and if you had enough of these, you probably could bring down a dragon, right? If you had enough and they could actually hit it.
It looks like you only really need to get 2 or 3 of them in there, and he's in trouble.
So Tyrion is begging Jaime not to do it. Tyrion still has love for his brother. Jaime, he grabs a spear. When he grabbed the spear, I knew he was kind of gone. I think he needed to use his Valyrian steel sword to do it. Jaime is charging right near Daenerys. Daenerys turns around and looks at him. This is a great moment. But then, you know who. And that was Dickon who saved him, right? That was Dickon who...
See, I thought it was Bronn who saved him.
Oh, was it Bronn who saved him? Okay, hold on. I thought it was
Dickon. It's hard to tell.
I called it a Dickon deep dive, but what if this was a Bronn bomb? All right, we're going to go frame by frame.
Yeah, really
slow.
So
we can correct this, everybody. There is lovely Daenerys.
And then it's going to be the dragon. That's really nice when the dragon head comes down. Now, again, this water is really deep, really close.
Yeah, it's got a deep edge here on the pool. Oh, it's such a blur. Yeah, that's Bronn. That's Bronn. All right, so I gave it the terrible name. It is Bronn who saves Jaime.
You can see because he's got hair there.
Yeah, now that we're going frame by frame, you can really see it. And how many frames are there in a second again, Catfish? Call back.
30. That is a great...
You would
great
still be...
Shot.
I mean, where they
but
are
see,
so
the
close
is,
to the flame, they'd be dead too.
Yeah, well, the other thing is he's riding through water that's like ankle deep for the horse. They jump 5 feet, and all of a sudden they're going down, 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 down. You know what? That's all right. I still give it a 10. 10 out of 10.
This action scene is a complete 10.
Double Fs.
Double Fs?
Flambéed fighters.
All right, so.
Sinking.
We really only focus on Jaime sinking. You would assume they'd want Bronn to live so Bronn could have a reunion with Tyrion. Once again, if this is the end of the Kingslayer, I'm going to be blown away because it hasn't hit me like it's the end of the Kingslayer.
Yeah.
But it could be him. I mean, how would anybody really survive this? How's anybody in this fight going to be able to dive down? Maybe the Dothraki weren't wearing armor so they could go down and get him. Could Drogon stick his neck down there and grab him? I mean, hey.
Yeah, I don't know how he's going to... I just can't imagine that's how he dies. I just can't see it.
So powerful, Catfish. Yep. So powerful.
Yep.
We have been blessed,
amazing.
Catfish.
Amazing.
There are now only 3 episodes left in season 7. There are only 9 episodes left in the entire run.
Now notice, because of this shortened season,
yeah,
I feel like in previous seasons we followed the same pattern. First couple episodes, I'm really excited about them because they're putting everything in place. Mm-hmm. You're a little less excited about them. And then we kind of agree the middle episodes, it's still kind of, there's still more
they
things
tend
being
to have
put
problems
in
around
place.
This first season, you go back and watch the first season. Episode 5 is really good. Episode 6 is really good. I'll grant somebody if they want to go tough on episode 7. But in recent seasons, I mean, let's look at last year. And I'm tough on last year. Of the 10, I really only liked the 5, but the 5 I loved were really, really good. But right in the middle of that 6th season, episode 5 was The Door with Hodor. I love that episode a lot, but it was the next 2 where, yeah, you're like, oh. And actually the 3rd one, because Arya's leaving the Faceless Men, was episode 8. So you're right. There were always kind of lags or lulls, doldrums in the season. We don't have time for doldrums. We have
three
episodes left. That is heartbreaking. I actually might cry over this, not the Stark Reel, though there are only three episodes left this year. Only nine left in total. Listeners,
I'll take seven every time.
Every time.
If they're going to be like the first four are like this. Every time I'll
every
take seven.
Every time.
Every time. Not every other time.
What about?
Uh-huh.
What if I wanted to play with this?
Every time.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this. If you have a dissenting opinion, if you didn't love this episode, we're always happy to hear everybody's thoughts.
Why. I would honestly love if someone didn't like this episode, who ranked it, say, below an 8.
Yeah.
Let us know why.
Oh, yeah. You can hit us up on our Facebook page. We're really trying to build up our community there. People who listen to our Twin Peaks podcast, Twin Peaks, The Gifted and the Damned, they love leaving comments. Game of Thrones listeners, we need you to give us some feedback there. It's facebook.com/doublepodcast. It's the word double, the single letter P, the word podcast, plural, facebook.com/doublepodcast. We want to see you there. If you're too excited, don't even want to wait to log into Facebook or have a character limit on your excitement, you can reach me. My name's Bubba on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And you can hit me up, Catfish at CJGman67.
And you'll hear us.
No, you won't, because
we won't be here next
week.
Oh, brother. Yeah. Okay.
Every week.
Every week.
Because this is the Joffrey podcast, and Joffrey is the greatest character, real or fictional, in the history of mankind. We nominate our Joffrey of the Week, someone who represents one of the greater aspects of Joffrey. And this week, Bubba.
This week, get to it, quick.
It's quick questions. Okay, who is a great man who was intelligent, smart, and tough, who just recently blossomed like a star? Like a supernova, and then it looks like they went away, but they're going to come back later to take charge.
I hope you're talking about Mooch.
It is! Anthony Scaramucci.
All right.
Yes. The man, the myth, the legend, who will be back again, just like Joffrey. In fact, I think right now he's working on Joffrey's comeback speech.
Let me tell you, Anthony Scaramucci, I think your trip to Hawaii was a Scaramucci in one day.
Well, my trip to Hawaii was almost longer than Scaramucci's time in his office.
All right. Well, that's
great.
Now,
what about you, Bubba? Who is your Joffrey of the Week?
Well, I've been thinking about this all week, Kevin.
I'm sure you have.
And the person I'm going to nominate is somebody who, like Joffrey, loves ladies. Like Joffrey, when the fighting surround, he's not around. It's Sir Davos. Sir Davos has a wife. He doesn't care. He's going to check out a lady. Joffrey had a betrothed, Sansa. He's like, I don't care. I'll get another betrothed, Margaery. Sir Davos, my Joffrey of the Week.
Wow. It's really nice we could see. I like Sir Davos. And the fact that for once in his life, he was able to reach the stars and come woefully short, but still reach for them is nice to know.
Oh, heck yeah. So anyway, guys, go to our Facebook page, tweet us out, let us know all your wonderful thoughts, predictions, ideas. This is a great season to tell.
Yeah, and this is it. I'm not going anywhere else. We're going to be glued here on Sundays. Yeah.